Okay, today is March 28th. We have 15 minutes to learn Sefer Yeshayahu, the last 27 chapters in general. The last class, and we have the real whirlwind, remember back here? We took a picture of it, I hope, right?
The
Maftoros, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, and so we made some determinations that Yeshayahu is almost a clean sweep of Haftorahs from the Parshios. Sefer Melachim seems to clean up for the holidays. Right, you get that? The Parshios, however, and this is a more important point. The purpose of saying a Haftorah is, you'll find different opinions in the Mefarshim. I'm going to give you just the simplest explanation. It's an attempt to bring a redemptive theme that connects to the Torah reading. Why we need to do so, I don't have to explain. Redemption is a worthy thing of itself. Whether it's like the Shalosh says, because we were prohibited from reading Torah, so we want to read. All right, then it doesn't have to be redemptive, right? But the point is that if this is the reason for saying of Torah in the first place, it stands to we understand why Yeshayahu would be the clean sweep, because he is the most redemptive book of the Bible. Okay, he's the Gemara calls it Kula Nechemta. That's an exaggeration. It means Rov Nechemta. Say cool in the chapter. The very first chapter is the Shabbos Chazon, is the Shabbos for Tisha B'Av for a good reason. It's very, very Puranus in nature. Puranus meaning it's about punishments and that will come to us if we don't change our ways. So I want to compare what we're doing with chapter 40 through 766, Mem through Samach Vav, is that there are four chapters just before then that tell an historical description of the near conquest of Jerusalem by the Assyrians. These four chapters can be found in Sefer Melachim, Bet, and Divrei Hayamim, Bet. It's pretty amazing. The story of these four chapters are told three times in the Bible. That the Assyrians camping around Jerusalem and very nearly destroying Jerusalem, which was already threatened by Yeshayahu's contemporary Micha, but because Yeshayahu prayed and God answered his prayers and Jerusalem was saved for another day. Okay, that lasted the Assyrians. I think that's what we talked about this when we did chapter 7, 8, 9, and 10, but the Assyrians were stricken overnight by a terrible, devastating plague of some sort. It says in the Tanakh that the angel of death killed them. And we can explain just scientifically, they brought in a lot of women to service the soldiers, and that's very easy to spread some kind of Ebola or some kind of virus that would kill a lot of them very quickly. Their own records refer to this. Okay. So these four chapters I just described to you. Okay. What happens just before Perek Lamed Hey seems to connect to the Nechama of Perek Mem, which means that this looks like an insertion here, and the question of whether the last 27 chapters are somehow related in any way to the first 39 chapters is the topic of the remaining moments we have here today. Okay, it's a question of authorship. There are some psukim in these last 27 chapters that stretch our credulity that they could be written by someone approximately the year 700 BCE. Okay? 722 is when the 10 tribes are scattered by the Assyrians. 10 lost tribes, right? 701 is when they fail to conquer Yerushalayim. It does not mean we're out of the water. We're not in the clear by any stretch. The Assyrians in Tanakh says they conquered many, many Yehuda cities, and took them over. If you would take this history from the Assyrian records, you would think there are no more Israelites alive. They describe in their records how they absolutely wiped us out and we were never to rise again. Well, here we are. Right? Okay. By the way, it sounds like what the Arabs did on the fourth day of the Six-Day War. Jordan joined because Egyptians were broadcasting that their tanks are rolling into Tel Aviv for their own people to hear.
It's funny.
Right? So Jordan said, okay, we're coming along. We're easy pickings. We're going to get in. Right? Hashem works in strange ways, right? Okay, so around 700 BCE is where this is all taking place. And yet, in the last 27 chapters, there are messages that only make sense for 200 years later. Such as, you Jews have been in exile long enough. It's time for you to leave Bavel. God has tasked Koresh, king of Persia, with a great task for Israel to help rebuild the land. What? Persia? 700 feet? What are you talking about? Bavel isn't even on the block yet. Kavachomer, not Persia. You know what I'm saying? Bavel doesn't become a power for another 50 years after this. Nabopolassar starts a reign that his son Nebuchadnezzar really used to rule much of the world for, not even for so much time. The Assyrians ruled the world for a lot longer than the Babylonians, because the Persians came in then. Right? Okay, you get it? So what? Why would Yishayahu in the year 700 be telling an exiled people from Bavel it's time to go back home? You get it? Now, if you can have an answer for that. In fact, there's a whole book dedicated to answering that question called Echad Haya Yishaya. Get the title? The author is Rachel Margoliot. And she uses all kinds of linguistic, thematic proofs that the author of the first 39 chapters is the same as the author of the last 27. I must confess to you that while I may agree with her conclusion, I am not impressed with her proof. Good Shabbos. Isaiah 2, let's call her. Surely, if he added 27 chapters, would want to make them
sound
stylistically like the first 39. So,
yeah.
Her proofs, get this, what I'm about to say is absurd and even possibly heretical. I'm sure heretical. Her proofs of the first 29 chapters, the first 39 chapters being of the same author as the last 27, can draw you to the conclusion that Yirmiyahu wrote Tvarim and Yechezkel wrote Vayikra. Because their styles are also similar. Okay? Don't hit me with this, because if you want to prove that Yishayahu was one, the proof is because the Gemara says so, and it's maybe a matter of faith, I don't know. But if you want to use the proof that the style is similar and the use of similar words, and chapter 11 says no more wild animals are going to haunt my and affect my mountain, and then there's a verse like that in the second half of the book, any of those proofs is just what I would normally expect. It's sort of like the answer I give when people say Shlomo couldn't have written Mishlei because there are so many proverbs in Mishlei that are similar to Egyptian ancient proverbs. Good Shabbos! I would be surprised if that were not the case. He was the son-in-law of the king of Egypt. Of course he knew Egyptian proverbs and incorporated them. If I have a proverb that says stolen waters are sweet, that means that person stole it from Ben Franklin, who said forbidden fruit is sweet. Or that Ben Franklin stole it from Mishlei? Come on. I must tell you, I'm not impressed with the individual proofs, even if I may agree with her conclusion. Right? But then we have to ask the question, why would Yishayahu tell an audience in 700 BCE about an exile of the Babylonians? A sharper question than that would be, then when Yirmiyahu, approximately the year, let's say, 600, when Yirmiyahu approximately the year 600 would tell the people, these are real approximations, more like 620, but Yirmiyahu approximately the year 600 was telling the people, listen guys, Yerushalayim has fallen into great moral disrepair. If you change your ways, we'll be able to remain here and our kingdom will thrive and the land will produce again. But if you turn on God, he will turn on you and the Babylonians will take over. And the Kastim will rule. If the people were aware of Yeshayahu's proclamation, they would say, excuse me, it's already predicted. We're going into exile. What good would that do? Right? What good will that do, right? So that is a legitimate concern. Do you have an answer for that? It's possible Yeshayahu wrote those chapters to be used in the event that people don't exercise their free will to do tshuva in the future and prevent those things from happening. It's a forced answer, but okay. You know what I'm saying? In other words, had B'nai Yisrael exercised their free will to listen to Yirmiyahu, right? So Rashi writes in Bereishis, in Shmos, God never hardened Paro's heart. God never does that. It's just that it was predictable that Paro would not listen to Moshe, based on the background. That's why Moshe purposely uses plagues that can be explained. And the only one where Paro really loses it and says, you're the tzaddik, I should get that, is after the hail. But when the hail stopped, he said, listen, I'm not going to. If the hail was unusual, that should raise up fire and such friction. Right? Okay, so that's how we understand this. Okay? Now, the last thing is that the first Rishon to present such an opinion was Ibn Ezra. Okay, you've heard of him?
Yeah.
Ibn Ezra, born in 1085. Beginning of chapter 40, he quotes a Rav Moshe HaKohen, who says the last 27 chapters were written at the time of Ezra or even after Yirmiyahu. And the question is, does Ibn Ezra agree with him? Who's Rav Moshe HaKohen? We know him. I think his full name is Rav Moshe HaKohen Ibn Jikatila. And he presents such an opinion. I think it can be shown that Ibn Ezra disagreed with it. While that's a tough position, because if Ibn Ezra disagreed with it, he should have said so. He should have said, but Moshe HaKohen thinks these 40 prokhim were written, these 27 prokhim were written later, but I disagree with him, then say so. When you quote him, you just quote him, then he seems to be able to agree. But there is evidence elsewhere in the Sefer Yeshayahu that he disagrees. Okay, we'll begin the next class with that evidence. Okay. Thank you, guys.